since George Floyd, there were so many lenders that made commitments that they were going to put capital in directly into helping African-American communities and never put $1. Every one of those lenders should be held accountable.
When asked what he thinks of DEI initiatives, broker owner and CEO of Blue Dolphin Capital, Sam Harris, responds back with one question. Where are the results? That's the moment when DEI advocates begin to squirm in their seats. With all the DEI initiatives happening in the mortgage industry, to help either under-resourced borrowers or recruit more diverse industry professionals, there hasn't been much progress at all. And some metrics, like the gap between white and black homeownership rates, are actually getting worse. So are companies and other nonprofits putting in genuine effort to make a difference for black, Hispanic, and other under-resourced borrowers? Or is it simply a buzzword companies use to get their name in the press and improve their reputation? Harris believes most people involved in DEI and the companies that support them aren't being intentional. Essentially, when a company needs to cut costs to improve on margin, executives ruthlessly slash expenses wherever necessary. But when a company fails to reach DEI goals, they pat their own backs for trying and nothing changes. Harris, a black broker owner himself, said he does not believe in DEI, and he's likely not the only one. Today's episode, we have Harris call out lenders, banks, nonprofits, the government, and the media for overhyping DEI efforts. Well, thank you, Sam Harris, for joining us on the Gated Communities podcast.
Thank you. You're welcome. Glad to be here.
Awesome. And just for our audience and our viewers here who aren't familiar, I'll just kind of have you explain your background and, you know, what you do now and kind of how you got, I guess, interested in the mortgage industry in the first place.
Fantastic. My name is Sam Harris. I'm a real estate broker, developer, and mortgage broker. And I got started in this business back in 1992. I was a financial advisor working with Smith Barney, and I had a district called St. Armand Circle. If you've never been to Sarasota, Florida, you have to go there. They have some of the best chocolate in the world. And I was sitting there, and there was a gentleman next to me. He knew that I had a mortgage broker license. I was not using the license. The company I worked with, they had the ability to do loans, mutual funds, stock portfolios, retirement plans, and I could have cared less about doing a mortgage. My concept of a mortgage broker was car salesman. I was like, I just don't want to be that. But I was sadly mistaken. His name was Russ. When he set me down, Katie, he shared with me the development that was happening in Sarasota. And he said, Sam, I'm so busy. I need help. He had a stack of files next to his desk, and the average loan size was $1 million. This is back in 1992. And I says, well, Russ, you know, doing a file like this, what kind of money are we talking about you can earn doing this? And he says, well, I'm going to earn $40,000 on this deal. I said, I'm in. So that's how I got introduced to the mortgage broker business, is another professional that gave me some insight on how the business worked. He gave me exactly 4 hours. He says, you're the type of guy I can tell that you probably wouldn't be with me long. So I'm going to give you 4 hours. I'm going to show you this program called Calyx. And I'm going to show you how to use a spreadsheet and engage. And here's a list of lenders. That's how I got into the business.
Yeah, that's pretty similar to other stories I've heard because of the, you know, just the amount of opportunity within this industry, the earning potential it has, and the fact that you don't need a college degree in this. There is no college degree in mortgages. So people come from a variety of backgrounds. The one obstacle, though, is it's about who you know, and that is the entry barrier there instead of what degree you have, which can also, you know, lead to complications, which we'll obviously get into. But I want you to kind of also explain how you came to write the article for NMP, A Critical Juncture. You know, the interaction that you had with Vincent Valvo and the problem that you were seeing at the time.
Okay, great. So, I mean, it came about from a post that Vince and the company put on LinkedIn. And I was looking at a list of people that you were saying that were these great leaders. I believe the wording was that these are the leading industry leaders. And I knew most of the people on the list. And I called Vince, or I actually sent him a direct message. And I said, look, these are not the people we should be talking about, because there are some people that are actually doing things that are making a difference. And it seems like it's the same people that were on here before. So Vince gave me a direct call and he says, well, I'm curious to understand where you're coming from and what your concept is of, you know, and what should we be doing? So as I talked to Vince, I explained to him, as an African-American broker, we have an extremely tough time in the business, and that there is not a lot of representation, and that there should be people on that list that reflect and look like me. There are some amazing people, and says, it doesn't have to be me. I know a whole list of people that should be on there that look like me that are getting passed by. And that's kind of how it came about. I had always been engaged on every trade organization, the industry, trade shows, events, speaking engagements. And Katie, whenever I would go there, there was never any representation. And it's gotten to the point where, man, how do I fit in? Where do I fit in? You know, in one of the greatest industries in the world, no matter where I go, whether it's New York, California, Florida, I constantly see lack of diversification within this space, whether it be, you know, real estate or the mortgage industry. So Vince asked me, he says, well, I'm curious, what is your thoughts about DEI? And what I said to him, Katie, was, I'm not a DEI guy. And he's like, well, what do you mean by that? And I says, what I mean by is that with DEI normally means African-Americans get left out and we become last. Example, if you look at the last 5 years of DEI professionals, the vast majority of them were white women or white men that were hired to head these departments. If you're going to have diversity and inclusion, why not have individuals that reflect what it's supposed to be? But it tends to always be who you knew, or you were in the right place at the right time. So diverse inclusion never worked for me or people that I knew within the group, because you have to specifically look at African-Americans in a different light because of all the reasons that have happened in this country that people don't like talking about. And it becomes very uncomfortable for people to face hard realities. And so that's where the conversation and the article came from.
Mm-hmm. And that article was really eye-opening. And what also drew me to it was the critique on DEI initiatives. And we've had, you know, maybe one or two people come on the show to kind of explain, you know, sometimes that it can be a superficial in nature, some of these DEI initiatives, but never really at length. So I'm very excited to talk about that today and kind of reevaluate our efforts there. I think that is absolutely needed. And, you know, you're right in the point that it also media coverage in general can definitely lend a hand in supporting the community and increasing diversity, you know, by increasing their exposure, adding credibility to them, and all of that sort of thing. Also, having them, you know, the way that we get to know professionals in the industry is if you have to be somewhat loud already. So loud on social media or coming to our events and kind of like, just so we can get your name somehow. So, you know, encouraging more people to do that within the community and obviously lending our hands in terms of media coverage and not just having, you know, separate magazines to kind of, oh, this is, you know, our mortgage women, incorporating more women into the other magazines, more minorities into the other magazines, to blend it all together. Because this is, as you point out in your article, a multicultural society. And that's a huge thing that we're going to address. And I think that's the crux of of the importance, you know, another dimension of the importance of this is the fact that everybody in the industry is suffering from not cooperating and encouraging more diversity and addressing every segment of borrowers there are out there. If America is a multicultural society, I want to ask you, how many of those groups does the mortgage industry adequately provide their services to now?
So, I mean, that is a loaded question, and I'll answer it like this. When I started out as a financial advisor back in 1992, one of the things that I had to learn is how money works. And the key word was called diversification. And I think what people has done is they've taken DEI and forgot about how powerful diversification is. So when you're allocating money, you want to diversify when you put your money into a portfolio. You don't want to put all your eggs in one basket because if something were to happen, you lose everything. It's the same thing when it comes for a company. A company should diversify in its employment, the people that it has within the makeup of all levels of leadership. Unfortunately, in the mortgage industry, has not done a good job at doing that, as well as the real estate industry. If we were to reflect our businesses to look like a mutual fund or a portfolio, not only would we be far better as an industry, there would be more people that look like myself and others within the group at the table, being able to handle this big issue that we have in front of us, which is housing. There are so many people out there that need housing, but a lot of times they need someone that's within their group to be able to communicate that and articulate it in a way, not only do they understand it, but they get it. So I think if you're a CEO or an executive, you really should change DEI to diversification and understand diversification gives you a greater return on your capital that you're putting to work for your company.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And not only in mortgage, we've also discussed, you know, just in terms of home building as well, there can be, you know, multicultural type of homes where in certain communities, it's very typical to have, a larger home that can house more of the extended family. So when we're talking about housing inventory, what needs to come to the market, we're also seeing a lack of this and therefore a lack of those buyers coming forward and thinking that there's something out there for them. So in all dimensions, you know, with mortgage, with home building, every segment of real estate definitely needs, there's a clear need for more representation. I want to kind of ask you about your personal journey because we didn't get to hear much of that in the article. And I'm very curious how the lack of representation has affected you, whether it's the beginning of your career and throughout.
So at the beginning of my career, it was like a fuel to a fire. If you ever heard of the phrase knowledge is power. Mm-hmm. At the time, my girlfriend, which is now my wife for almost 30 years, she says, you should go be a stockbroker. My mom said you can sell ice to an Eskimo. You should go interview at this stock brokerage firm in Tampa. And so I did. Katie, I went to the interview. I was 19 years old at the time.
Oh, wow.
In college, I wanted to do something different. I didn't want to be on a construction site. My family had done that all their life. I didn't want to be into agriculture. I wanted to do something in finance. I just love numbers. When I interviewed with this gentleman, first thing he said to me was, you'll never make it. Number one, you're African-American. Number two, you don't have an MBA degree because most professionals at the time were in a different matrix from what he was seeing in me. So that was my entry into the financial service industry. Think about that. I'm 19 years old. I'm eager to win. I'm willing to do whatever it takes. And the first thing that I'm hit with was the color of my skin and the level of my education. We know in the mortgage business, you don't need a degree to do well in mortgage or real estate. But because of this particular sector that I was seeking, I hit what I call systemic roadblocks. And that fueled me, Katie, not only to become really good at what I do, but to learn as much as I could about the financial service and the real estate sectors so that I can not only better serve people in my community, that I can be a voice to help educate individuals in the overall community of financial services, real estate, and lending.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I can't imagine how that must have felt at 19 years old. And we're also glad that you were, that you were that strong, that mentally strong at 19 years old to hear that and want to keep going. I can imagine that most would probably be like, well, you know, then this industry isn't for me. This industry is the worst of what I thought it was, and kind of turning away from it. But, you know, then again, there's people who have your type of reaction and will want to prove them wrong. So that's incredible. And I want to ask, you know, you bring up brokering specifically in your article, which I think is interesting. And another thing we've yet to talk about on the show. Why do you think, you know, becoming a broker, becoming a broker owner as a specific avenue is beneficial to people in the Black community?
Absolutely. So when you look at the current state of our economy, too many people are in an employee mindset and they're not in what I call an owner mindset. You cannot build wealth being an employee. So deprivation of capital has plagued the African-American community for over 100 years. So the only way to turn this tide around is that you need individuals that are local, that are in the community, that are professionals, that are providing adequate services that people need so that they can create jobs. When you have high-paying jobs within your community, you change the community. When you own something, you change the community. But when you're only an employee, you're helping building other communities that will never reinvest into where you live. So that is the reason for the need for more African-American broker owners. If you were to look at the top 10 cities, I'm in Tampa, Florida. In my city, less than 5 African-American broker owners are within a 25-mile radius of my office. There are over 500 other offices within a 20-mile radius of my office. So the lack of representation and the lack of broker owners being present in the market doesn't allow for those communities to be served properly because the representation is not there. So not only does a broker owner create a better presence within that community, it creates jobs and it creates generational wealth that the community can count on for years to come.
Mm-hmm. And that's interesting. I'm curious if borrowers have a bias of their own, if they walk into, a brokerage and see, you know, perhaps it's a majority Black staff or minority staff versus, you know, a majority white staff. Do they typically, you know, have, a bias of their own, or, you know, are they kind of, is that kind of removed from them in your experience?
So in my experience and experience of others that I've engaged with, the problem we have is that because there are few African-American broker owners present, the marketplace is highly demanding. So you're overcapitalized by other entities. So therefore, you don't get those people to walk in the door. You don't get those people to come to your location because all the other brokerages have marketed and advertised to those individuals. Now, when they do get to our office, they absolutely love the engagement. We're able to deliver great services, but that's the experience that I have had as a broker in the business. And I just want to be able to help change that dynamic so that we can have more representation so that the conversation we're having is not just a talking point.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what you mentioned before, kind of about the racial inequity that has built up over the years, contributing to this, to the fact that, we're seeing less broker owners, less Black borrowers, and obviously more recent events such as the subprime crisis that definitely, you know, played an effect on that. So for your... So are there any other, you know, particular reasons that might contribute to the fact that we're seeing not as many, less diversity among broker owners, besides the fact that, you know, there's this legacy of inequity? Are there any roadblocks in your journey or things that you've seen throughout your career that might dissuade, you know, more Black broker owners from coming to the forefront?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, the industry is not inclusive. You know, when you look, let's just start at the beginning. When you look at the federal government created the Federal Home Loan Agency. When the New Deal was created, it prohibited African Americans from absolutely participating in the home buying process. Not only that, professional real estate professionals could not even access the MLS system. They could not be a member of NAR because of the color of their skin. They couldn't live in certain districts. So the legacy is important to point out, but more importantly, we need action. We need action to correct these things because we know what the problem is. In addition to those legacy things that were started by the federal government, you also have institutions. Institutions played a major role in this. So they need to put forth the capital investment to make sure that organizations can be able to have the resources to develop a broker owner, because the average broker owner starting today in 2024, to adequately, properly do it right, you need at least $50,000. You have to set up your office with computers. You need technology. You need compliance. You need insurance. You have to have training. You have to have a staff. There are so many things that are needed in order for you to succeed and make your first dollar. And most African Americans throughout the country don't have $50,000 laying around when they first start, let alone most groups don't have that. But particularly African Americans don't have someone in their family that they can call and says, hey, Johnny, this is Sam. I'm thinking of becoming a broker. Can you give me $50,000? You know, I was, you know, talking with a guy the other day that is in Ohio. He's a young guy, Caucasian guy. He went to college, didn't know what he wanted to do. He decided that he was going to go into real estate and commercial development. Well, he couldn't get a loan. He had no credit, nothing. He was just out of college. But he called a family member, and that family member wrote him a check to get started, to buy his first property. They gave him 100% of what he needed to buy that first investment property. African Americans do not have that as a legacy within their communities to do that. So I would say, number one, federal government is responsible, need to do something, not just talk. One thing that they can do right now, Katie, is that in rural areas, you have what's called a USDA loan, 100% financing. But in most rural areas, it is Caucasian families that take advantage of that loan program. And it's 100% finance. It's a great loan program. But unfortunately, most African Americans that are buying homes live in urban or city areas. So they normally get FHA loans. FHA loans are, you know, 96.5%. Sometimes you can do 97. We need the federal government to do 100% FHA loan with no MI and no funding fee. That will change the game. Secondly, we need the industry to put forth capital into organizations like ARIE and others like us to be able to get professionals trained, get them the adequate amount of capital they need to start, and mentor them into the business. And then lastly, we need the industry, like yourself, as a publisher or someone that is in the magazine business. You wouldn't hire a person to publish your magazine that has no idea about writing. And too many organizations out there have hired people to be their president or their CEO of their organization of trade groups without the experience. And what you're seeing is a ripple effect. You're seeing the great equalizer of that effect, because if you don't have the proper leadership, how can you relate to the overall industry of the people that are in that industry, in that sector, if you don't know how to underwrite a mortgage, if you've never done a mortgage, how are you going to lead that organization and make sure that not only is diversification and equity inclusion involved, but making sure that you can understand that you're going out doing the right things for the greater community as opposed to for yourself.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I know that we have NAMBA and we've talked to them before and have written for them. But in terms of the major trade associations kind of representing lenders and originators out there, such as NAM, AIM, the MBA, and as you said, you go to these conferences and it's like a sea of white in there with all of the people at the top being white as well. Is that so? You want to see more inclusion within those associations? And I want to ask about the kind of legislative and efforts that they're doing now, all of their initiatives that they have under their belt. Would you like to see more diversity and inclusion initiatives included in that? And how is that another way to kind of address this?
So it's the only way you can address it is that you got to have the people at the table. You know, if you don't have the people at the table, you're going to have the same outcome. So those organizations that you just named, they're going to hit the same outcome that has been there 10 years, 20 years prior to them trying what they're doing now, because it's helping the same group of people. You got to have real leaders that are ready to have a real conversation about including African Americans and other groups into the conversation of making real change within the mortgage and real estate industry. If you do not have them, you're going to have the same conversation. You're going to have the same outcome. So I think it's necessary, but you got to do it with people that have the right agenda and not just the same old, same old.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what you were saying before, the difficulty some minority borrowers have in getting either a business loan or a mortgage from a bank or a typical lender, just because of the standards don't fit the demographic and due to the, you know, racial inequity that is built up over time, no wonder it is so hard. Do you think that's why brokers kind of may deliver a better service to these borrowers, to underserved borrowers in particular, and the fact that, you know, they present more options to them? Perhaps they don't have the traditional banking type of mindset. Perhaps they can find avenues that are more flexible for these borrowers.
So, I mean, I look at it like this. All real estate is local. So you got to have a local person that's engaged and you will be able to serve the people. Unfortunately, brokerages have become very regional or national. It is hard to serve people if you don't have a local presence. So based on where we're at with the market with high interest rates, I started when interest rates were over 18%. I remember when interest rates were 18% on a regular loan. I had to sell that loan. I had to educate that borrower why this was a good time for them to do it and that we would have an exit strategy for them. A lot of the broker professionals don't even know how to communicate that today, because all they talk about is rate. And what we should be selling is value. We get paid to think as brokers. And a lot of brokers have forgotten that, or they were never taught that. So what we have to be able to do is say, hey, wait a minute. Let's take a time out from this scenario thinking that brokers are the only answer, because we're not. We need the banks. We need those retail lenders. We need those finance companies. Sometimes they're doing things that we can't do. We need SBA loans. You know, if it wasn't for J.P. Morgan Chase, a lot of brokers wouldn't have a bank account, or for that veteran that needed to do something that was creative. So there are things that I cannot do, but I can't demonize a bank for doing a retail loan, however they do it. It's about relationships. It's about being local. And I believe the reason why the mortgage brokers going forward are going to be more small and more boutique, because you got to better serve your community. And it's hard to do it when you're a regional or a national player, because at the end of the day, now it becomes about the numbers as opposed to about the people.
Absolutely. And having that more boutique feel, it definitely helps originators build more knowledge about their borrowers and their borrower demographic, and allows them to feel, you know, more connected, anticipate their needs, and perhaps even find better wholesale partners because of it. I want to ask about whether you've witnessed or maybe in your own home buying experience, experienced discrimination against Black borrowers. I know that I've written a piece on FHA and how there can be some discrimination on the fact that that's considered a riskier loan. And then again, someone bringing up, well, maybe that's more of a redlining issue and they're discriminating against the borrower themselves. So I want to kind of ask you about that, whether you've experienced that, you've witnessed that in conversations that you've overheard. What do the typical white originator think of a Black borrower?
So I don't know what they traditionally think, but here's what I can say just from my own experience is that it is tough out here being an African-American broker owner, borrower, real estate professional. It's tough because you're being judged before you even hit the door. So a personal example is when I purchased my home, I put 20% down. This is over 20 plus years ago. They didn't think I can buy the home. They didn't think I can afford the home. And even when I put 20% down, I was treated less than. I wasn't given the same level of treatment that my white brothers and sisters were treated. We literally had to be on our builder every step of the way to make sure they built our brand new home, which was our dream home. My wife and I wanted a lot of unique things in the home. And we had to stay on them. When we got to the closing, Katie, after putting 20% down, going through the process with all of the things that I shouldn't have to deal with, but I do, I get to the closing, they give me the wrong keys, I've signed all these papers, I can't get into the house.
Oh my God.
So my first night of a home that I spent over $250,000 for 20 years ago, I can't even get in the house. Oh. There's no one that I can call. So I had to wind up sleeping in a hotel. I was excited with my kids and my wife. So it really didn't matter to us because we knew we were going to get in there. But the fact that I had to go through that process, there are so many families that go to a model home center that are completely blocked out when they walked in simply because they're being judged that they may not have what it takes or the resources or the capital to purchase XYZ home. I hear it all the time. And the answer is not for us to keep talking about it, not keep doing podcasts and getting the same talking points. What we need to do is get the lenders in the room, create an environment to where we can have the adequate funding to get more mortgage broker professionals in this business. If it's not getting more mortgage broker professionals, let's get more contractors, more real estate professionals that understand how to better serve this under-resourced community that we're talking about. So I don't like to say undervalued, minority, and all these other buzzwords. Really, the word we should be using is under-resourced. So when a community is under-resourced, it can be Black, it can be white, it can be Asian. Unfortunately, a high percentage of the under-resourced communities are African-American.
Mm-hmm. I agree with that. I like that term because I think it more so, you know, specifically points out the issue at hand and perhaps will allow people to better understand what is going on and what the actual problem is within the community. That's absolutely insane that you were locked out of your home, that you worked so hard to get. I can't imagine the same happening to me. Oh my goodness. That is quite the experience. And it's interesting the fact that someone, a lender, a bank, whoever, can see your financial profile, can look through everything that is fact. A bank statement is a fact, and still have their emotions and their personal bias override that. And not, you know, being able to provide good service, which is really just going to hurt that professional specifically. And of course, you know, sway people from more people in that community from approaching that company in the future. That's absolutely detrimental to their own business. And I want to ask about something that you said in the article that points out a critique of DEI initiatives. Are they merely symbolic gestures, or do they represent impactful change? And I want to point that question towards you. You know, where do you think most of these DEI initiatives lie? Do you think most of them are genuine, have a genuine intention to them? Or perhaps it's just, we like to say that, you know, we help the underserved, the under-resourced, and as kind of like when companies say that, oh, we're a big family and we have great culture.
I mean, it's pretty simple to answer. Show the numbers. Where are the results? That's
absolutely
it.
Absolutely. And I mean, so reevaluating as we look into some of these DEI initiatives, when you hear about them on the news, in daily news briefs and whatever, with companies coming out with DEI initiatives, what is something that would tell you that is superficial, you know, and probably won't lead to impactful change? Is it something that you can kind of spot, or is it just, I'm looking at the outcomes and nothing is happening?
So I'll answer like this. If you were to go back over your 25 plus podcasts and you listen to all the professionals that are pretty much disseminated some of the information that we're talking about right now, we got too many people that are playing a role and not putting action behind it to get results. We need results. So if you're going to put an initiative, no matter what company you are, don't be a humming gator. You know, that's the mouth of an alligator and the butt of a hummingbird. You know, you want to get results. And right now, those programs are not delivering the results simply because what it was intended for, it was intended to help more African Americans in a community that were being left out. And then it became LGBTQ, it became Hispanic, it became Asian, it became everything but what it was intended for. So now you have all groups that fall under DEI. So now what happens is the people that know the right people, that have the right connections, are the ones that get the help first. And the group that it was intended for never gets any help. They're left in last place. And right now, African-American professionals, not all of them, but a high percentage of them are not even being considered simply because they don't know the right people and they're not at the table. And this program has left them in last place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And what a lot of people have also mentioned is the fact this is a legacy business. So when you start off with mainly white people in the finance industries, and then they bring in their kids, you know, it's just going to continue on that way. What do you think, you know, about the fact that people call this a legacy industry? And is that kind of appropriate behavior? Does that stand in the way of change going forward?
I think change is in the eye of the beholder. So you can change in an instant. You just have to make your mind up to do it. And when those individuals understand that they're going to make more money by making the change, focusing on developing more opportunities for African-American professionals, it's going to help every group. Caucasian brokerages will do better. Asian brokers will do better. Hispanic brokerages will do better. Because now you're serving a wider audience that has been left out. As of today, there's 3.7 million Gen Z African-Americans that are ready to buy a home, but there is not enough representation to serve them. So what we have to do is stop thinking of, hey, is this a legacy thing? No, it's a mindset thing. That's what it is. Change your mindset to do something now that is beneficial for all, not just for a few.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. And I want to ask on your opinion on a white originator, a white broker owner who, let's say, wants to get more involved and wants to help more of these under-resourced communities and, you know, earning trust within that community. I mean, obviously, first and best option is to diversify the company. People seek, you know, familiarity, people who actually come from that community is help itself, and the fact that they could probably earn trust from them a lot better. But specifically when it comes to someone of a separate race in a separate group, trying to earn trust in the community, do you have either advice on how to do that? Do you recommend that? I want to kind of get your overview of that.
So my overview of that, the answer is yes, they need to get involved. And I would say, stop being silent. You gotta speak up, and then you gotta show out. You gotta get involved. If you are a Caucasian broker, it is your duty and responsibility to bring more people into it if you want to create a legacy business. And the way that you do that is doing what is right. And when you see something that is wrong, call it out. Now, I have a lot of Caucasian brokers that I'm friends with that do a lot of business. We talk about this behind closed doors, but they don't generally talk about it out openly. We need more of them to be more open, more vocal about it, not just talking, but putting the action behind and resolving the issue. Because right now, if you're a Caucasian broker, if you had five professional African-Americans in your office that were trained, that were given the resources, that were given the tool, they will bring you probably 40% more business than you have right now. Why are you leaving that opportunity on the table? So at the end of the day, change comes by you making a decision to say, that is wrong. I'm going to do what is right.
Interesting. Interesting. And I want to ask if there are any, I mean, since you are a broker, any particular lenders or other companies, maybe even other brokerages that you think serve the Black community well and other resource groups well, that you would kind of recommend?
So if I were to look at a wholesale lender overall, there's about a handful that serve them very well. When you look at the top 10, none of the top 10 wholesale lenders particularly serve the African-American community well, because they have not invested the capital in developing more broker owners. They spend money on marketing. They spend money on campaigns, conventions, trade shows, trips, and all these trinkets. Look, stop spending money on that stuff and go invest capital directly into developing more broker owners that happen to be in these under-resourced communities, that happen to be African-American. And here's what I tell people, Katie, stop making it about race. Okay, yes, I'm African-American. I know who I am. But at the end of the day, it's about economics. The reason why you want to take your capital as a wholesale lender and invest directly into this under-resourced community that happen to be African-American, it's going to probably add 25 to 30% to your bottom line this year and years moving forward. So it's about economics.
And I mean, that's an interesting point as well. And that's something that we also use as an angle. Like, I'm not telling you this to be a good person or to correct your morals. I'm telling you how to make money right now. I'm telling you, you know, what is a smart business decision, which is definitely an interesting approach. Absolutely. And in terms of what a lender or an originator can do to equip themselves with things that would better serve the Black community and other under-resourced communities, I know perhaps some special first-time home buyer or down payment programs. Is there anything else to keep in mind or anything else that those particular lenders have that allow them to better serve those communities?
So there's only one thing. I can give you a couple, but there's only one thing that's going to make the difference. Invest the capital that's required, period. We can talk about first-time home buyer program. I'm certified to do home buyer programs. None of the lenders take us up on that, okay? I'm certified with HUD, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, all those people. Sometimes you get overcharged with all this education and these programs, and it doesn't get to results. So what we need for individuals that are in a leadership position, whether they be an executive or they be the CEO of one of these lenders, get out and put the results. Stop hanging with the same crowd. Develop some new relationships. See where the low-hanging fruit may be that you haven't been. Because if you continue doing the same thing, you're going to and expecting different results, that's insanity. Mm-hmm. The mortgage industry has been doing the same thing since 1968. Think about that. Every 4 to 5 years, we have the cycle. And we're talking about the same thing. And not getting any results.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, I mean, kind of shifting the narrative to, you know, with, you want this to create better culture, to you want this to create, you know, a better bottom line, to create a better business, a more profitable business, seems to be like a more effective method. Can you think of any other ways to kind of promote or and motivate more genuine action rather than superficial, action on behalf of DEI? Is there anything, I guess the real question beneath that is, can you change the way, can you change what people want? Can you make people want something? And is that the way?
Yeah, you can't make people want something. It's got to be something that's innate. If you're a good person, you're going to do what's right. It doesn't matter where you come from or what your background is. If you want to do what is right, right? So to answer your question, I think there's three things that we need to do. Number one, we need people to be intentional. Be intentional about your actions. So if there's an organization out there that has a program that can develop more broker owners, put the capital resources in play and do something with them. Don't inspect their situation and say, hey, because you're not in the right group, I'm not going to fund your initiative. Stop doing business with people that haven't given you the results. What you want is more growth in the future, not the superficial hype of today. Because hype will not be long lasting. When you mention the word legacy, you cannot build legacy with hype. Because at some point, that hype is going to fizzle out. Mm-hmm. So if you start building legacy by being intentional and having what I refer to as geometric progression, inch by inch is a cinch. You know, I'd rather be the tortoise than to be the rabbit. A lot of lenders are out there trying to just be the rabbit. Why not be the tortoise and build it right? Take your time and get to know the people within your broker community, making sure that they have the right resources. They may not need technology, but what they may need is for a lender to come in and says, hey, if you can develop two people, we'll match you the capital to develop an additional two. That's how you change the game, is using geometric progression to be able to build that legacy that is long lasting. The second thing that we could do is right now, with the network of people that you and your magazine company have come across in the last 36 months since George Floyd, there were so many lenders that made commitments that they were going to put capital in directly into helping African-American communities and never put $1. Every one of those lenders should be held accountable. Every one of those CEOs should be held accountable. And if they're not doing what they say they're going to do, we need the overall broker community to say, hey, I'm not doing business with you. Because you're talking out of both sides of your mouth. You're not doing what's right for the broker community. You made a commitment and you reneged on it. Hold them accountable. And then the last thing is that we have to bring more African-American brokers to the table, owners. We don't need to have more of all the same. We need more African-American brokers. And here's a point that I want to make. I looked at all of the housing reports that NAMBA has done, that the National Hispanic Association has done, that the Asian Coalition has done. Here's the stark difference. Whenever any other group is talking about their demographics or their community, they only talk about their community. when African Americans are talking about their community, we have to include everybody in our community. That's why we're not getting the results, because we cannot be intentional in developing our community, because society, the world, the industry is forcing us to say Black and brown communities. Black and brown communities is not being stated when the Hispanic organization is doing their housing report. It's not being stated when the Asian groups do their report. So we have to be more intentional, and we need to make sure that we have more people that in the African-American community, because there's an old saying that says, all tides, you know, lift boats. Well, in the African-American community, we're in a boat, but our boat has a hole in it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I definitely understand what you're saying, and how the segmentation and, you know, the separation between the groups, it kind of diverts efforts. Now you have lenders saying, I'm going to help the Hispanic community, but not, you know, not really focusing on all those other communities. And perhaps, yeah, if they were able to kind of unite, then it's like, if I'm getting help, then I want them to get help too, type
absolutely.
Of thing. Yeah,
absolutely.
Absolutely. And in terms of changing people's minds, and that can be, you know, obviously very complicated and very hard when you're talking about a giant collective group of people, in terms of educating them and changing their mind. But do you think that perhaps what people need is an example, to look at, to say, you know, if we can tell people you're going to make more money by embracing diversity and inclusion, and they can say, oh, okay. But, you know, if there were someone, you know, an example of somebody who actually followed that and, were able to demonstrate to people, you know, through their success, how that actually is a profitable concept. Is that something that you would like to see happen? And do you think that that would really make an impactful change?
Yeah, I definitely would like to see that happen. And the way that we have to articulate a better message as mortgage professionals, because we do not, as a whole, we're not selling the opportunity of how big the opportunity is to be a broker owner. If you're a broker owner and you're doing it right, you should be somewhere in excess of $250,000 plus in income. If you do it right, if you have the right mentorship, if you have the right development, you have the right resources, that's where you could be as someone without a high school diploma, someone with no college degree. You can do that in some states. Some states require you to have a high school diploma, but the opportunity hasn't been sold properly to all groups. And I think if we did a better job as an industry articulating that, as opposed to going, spending all this money on lobbying, there's a lot of organizations that do that. Lobbying is good for the right thing. But when you're just spending money and the results that you're getting are not helping a larger percentage of the people, why not lobby and get more high school students? Mm-hmm. Why not lobby and get more college graduates that are in their last year of their program for the undergraduate? Start targeting them and says, come and do an internship with us and do something to where you can do a learn and return. If you come to and work with our community and you come back home, you can be able to get help and assistance to help you start your business. So there are things that can be done for us to get more people into the business. So I agree with you. We need to do a better job at talking about the opportunity. And there are a ton of examples of people that are doing well in the mortgage industry. Unfortunately, those people don't get highlighted because we got what I call the performance players. You got all the performance players that are out there. They know the right people. So you always see their information on the Instagram or the social media or at the trade shows, and the people that are actually doing work that are making a difference in the community, no one knows who they are.
Do you want to say their names or just mention a few of them on the podcast right now and kind of explain, you know, the work that they're doing?
So, I mean, I wouldn't particularly want to do that because I would like to have their permission before I did that.
No problem.
But I do know quite a few people that are out there that are doing some phenomenal work.
Mm-hmm. If you want to send that to me after this interview, that would absolutely be great. I can have them come on or, you know, put them in the magazine, of course. And and begin, you know, highlighting them. I think that's, if anything, my call to action here. And I think what you're saying is really reflective of a African proverb that you put into your story. If you want to go quickly, go alone. If you want to go far, go together, which is very interesting.
Yes, yes. I live my life by that. And when you think about it, that's what we're all trying to do. We all want the same thing, Katie. We want our families to succeed. We want to do well. That's why we got in this business, is to help that family reach what we refer to as that American dream. It is the most rewarding thing that you can do as a professional, is getting someone in a home. It's the biggest ticket that they will buy in their lifetime. And to have the opportunity and the privilege to be able to assist someone to do that is a big deal. And we don't make a big enough deal about it, because we're more transaction-based as opposed to building relationships. And I think the industry as a whole, as a professional like yourself, we got to start selling the relationship, the value of creating something that'll be legacy in the future, cannot be built through transactions. If all you're doing is transactions in the mortgage business, you're probably out of business, you know, in the current environment, because they didn't build relationships.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And that specifically is a message that we can, you know, repeat in our magazines a lot, that this is a relationship business. And it's funny that we host these conferences, and that is a phrase that gets repeated over and over. And then people say, well, how am I supposed to keep up with business when times are hard? And it's like, well, what happened to all those relationships? It's, you know, it's definitely interesting. And that's not to downplay that this market, I know this market is hard. But I want to ask you, kind of as a lasting message for our listeners and the readers of our magazine, what is some concrete course of action that they can take after listening or reading your article, you know, as in step one of what they can do to help people today?
So I think step one, they should reach out to the magazine and say, hey, I want to help. And then let's get those individuals that want to help either connected to an organization that is doing those things. You know, you have some that we've named already, named NAMBA, our organization, which is AREAGroup.org, that can do things that can help assist in that platform. But I think that's the first action, is getting in connect with you and your organization and say, hey, I want to do something that's meaningful, that we can make a direct impact.
Mm-hmm. And I would add to that, for any brokers listening or any brokers that potentially read your article, to take a second look at the resources. If they're questioning, well, I never have, you know, Black borrowers come into my office. It's not that I dissuade them. Perhaps taking a look at the resources that you're offering, the wholesale lenders and the lenders you're partnering with, the real estate agents you're partnering with, everybody within your network, kind of reevaluating that and then asking yourself, am I able to serve Black borrowers and these under-resourced groups, I think is a huge
starting
point.
I will say this, and I normally don't do this, but I'm going to do it. There is one lender that has done a phenomenal job at turning the tide to get more African-American broker owners and borrowers through the process. And I have to, that's Rocket Mortgage. They have done a phenomenal job at doing that. And I can't say enough about the organization. My team and I had the opportunity to visit Detroit. And when we saw the things that they had done, they're really impacting the community. They're impacting the community. So that's what it's about, is that your legacy is not what you did today, is what people are going to have for the future tomorrow. They put so many things in place that Detroit will never be the same again, simply because they cared enough to do the right thing for all of the people.
Mm-hmm. And having visited Detroit and the downtown after Rocket came in and revitalized the place, I would encourage any listeners, you know, go check it out again. You don't know Detroit anymore. It's completely changed. If you haven't been in, you know, a decade or so, then you're definitely in for a surprise. I think that, yeah, I agree with that. They're definitely doing amazing work.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Sam Harris, for coming on the podcast and for sharing your experience with us and for talking about your article and contacting our publication in the first place. I think it was an incredible opportunity, and I look forward to hearing, you know, from people you know that you recommend, and hopefully others that will contact us in the future.
Absolutely. And enjoyed the engagement we had here, and you guys are doing great work. And we look forward to continuing the conversation.
Awesome. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Gated Communities, hosted by me, Katie Jensen, for National Mortgage Professional. You can find more episodes at nationalmortgageprofessional.com and anywhere else you get your podcasts. Make sure to subscribe so you can get future episodes, and be sure to rate and review us if you haven't already. This podcast is copyrighted by American Business Media.